We're in safe hands this week as the We Are Imps podcast returns. All the talk might be about our recent goal scoring exploits, but the man that we're speaking to today is fast approaching 20, yes, 20 clean sheets. It is, of course, our great Dane in goal. It's super Lucas Jensen. Lucas, lovely to have you on the We Are Imps podcast. Firstly, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So far, we've spoken to, in terms of first team players, we've spoken to Rico and Lass. Both were very, very good, so no pressure at all.
Well, do you know what? I'll take it in. I like the pressure.
Good. Well, we know you like the pressure, having seen what we have so far this season. At the time of recording, 17 clean sheets. We're recording this, by the way, I should say, before the Leyton Orient and the Reading fixtures, so fingers crossed for a couple more good results. But what is the mood in camp like now?
I think everyone is smiling. Anything else would be, well, wouldn't be in place, in all honesty. We have a great run of games coming up, but we played some great games as well. But we're not done yet. We haven't achieved anything. So I guess we still have to keep our head in the game and then hopefully get a few more.
No wins in December and January, and then this happens. Was there a point around that time where something clicked, whether it was in training, whether it was in a match? Was there something where you, maybe personally, or you as a team thought, okay, we know what we're doing now?
In all honesty, I can't tell you. It is, as you're saying, it's just a switch just happened at some point. Obviously, the new gaffer came in and he had to implement a lot of new things, and that takes time. So I think we hit a bad period where we had some tough games. We played top six teams, which obviously isn't easy when you got a new gaffer coming in. We had some injuries, some suspensions, which doesn't help. But we were just trying to do what the gaffer wanted. And I think in the new year, we played the Blackpool away, lost 2-0. And since then, I just don't think we look back. We just carry on. What the gaffer wants is what we're trying to do every game. And at the moment, it's working.
Was there something in that Blackpool game, despite the loss, where you came away and thought, right, okay, this, we didn't get the result that we wanted, but we know what is expected of us now?
We had some great spells. I think the game specifically was the Wickham second half, where we came back from 1-0 down. We scored a late equaliser, and the way we put pressure on in that second half was what the gaffer wanted us to do, and he was putting emphasis on that's how we should play, and that's how we should go after teams. So I remember hearing an interview with him where he was saying those specific things, and I think we've done that since. Trying to start the games fast, put pressure on the teams, don't let them get out, don't have any time on the ball. So I think that's what, if people around League One look at Lincoln, they say, yeah, this is how they play. So I think that's just what we have to carry on doing.
It's that intensity, isn't it? That's, I think, anyway, from a fan's perspective, what has really caught the eye from yourself right through to the forward line. It is that ability to win the ball back as soon as you've lost it. The fitness levels seem to have gone up a notch as well. What's changed from that perspective?
In training, well, training is harder. I feel like it's kind of like a pre-season. In the season, there's more intensity, and you can't just be on the low side. So we obviously had a couple of sessions the last week because we had the international break. And if people are not doing their job, not running hard enough, they'll be told. And I like that because we're in a good place at the moment, but we can't just stop doing what we're good at. And as you're saying, from the outside, the intensity we're bringing is what causes other teams' problems. Winning the ball back in their half and then have a forward pass, and then at the moment it seems like everything is going in, which is great, obviously.
It's such a close-knit team as well. That's how it seems from the outside anyway. And, you know, me, myself, being around the club a little bit more this season as well, it certainly seems that in-house too. What do you put that down to? Is this a special group of lads? You've now been a part of, you know, quite a few different clubs. How does it compare from that point of view?
I think everyone's got good abilities. That's the first thing. It's a young group of lads, which helps. We've got some experienced lads, which can obviously bring the experience. And I think I worked it out. I'm the fifth or the sixth oldest, and I'm just turning 25, which says quite a bit. So all the young lads have this eager to actually prove themselves, and they want to work hard. So it's just not a game of 11 lads on the pitch who is starting. It's a game of, what would you say, 15, 16 lads who can come on, and everyone wants to start. So it's about keeping the jersey, and if you don't do well enough, you can potentially lose it. So we're a big group that want to do well, and I think that's raising the standard, both in training and on the pitch.
We'll come on to specific moments in the season shortly. Firstly, let's look back at when you joined us in the summer, because you were with Burnley from 2019, so that's, you know, 4 or so years with them. Obviously now it looks like the right decision, but at the time, was it a tricky one to make? Because of course the club just gets promoted to the Premier League. You're going out on loan a couple of times as well. There must have been, I'm guessing, that temptation to try and stay and fight for your place, for the potential for Premier League football.
Yeah.
So these are the decisions I guess you have to make as a young footballer.
In all honesty, it wasn't a hard decision. I had a really good spell at Burnley. If I look back and say my first year was really good, then I had a couple of tougher years, if you like, where things weren't going as well as I wanted to. So when I came up to my fourth year, and I was out of contract, and I saw Burnley were doing well in Championship. They were obviously going into the Premier League at that point. But I wanted to play football. I didn't want to sit on the bench. I didn't want to just be the second or the third choice, which I was going to be. I wanted to be in goal. And as a young keeper, you want to play games, because otherwise you're not going to get any experience. So that was my priority, to go out to a team that wanted me, that wanted to play me, I could see a future with. And I must admit, the way Lincoln approached me was, it sounded like the perfect fit, and they were doing their homework. So I couldn't really turn that down. And I've seen what Lincoln has done to young players, so I thought, yeah, I can see myself in that. So when the opportunity came up, I said yes straight away, basically.
It's easy for me to sit here and say it, I guess, but it does seem, having spoken to a number of players that have come in particularly recently, that extra bit of homework, that extra bit of research that the club does on the players seems to have a real effect, because it's easy to sit on the outside and go, oh, well, they're only, you know, footballers only move around because they want the money or this and that. But I guess, you know, and I'm not asking you to speak on behalf of every footballer in the world, but as a footballer, you want to be wanted, don't you? And that must play such a huge part.
100%. I guess it's what type of player you are. And the type of player I am is, I want to see someone believing in me, because then I can prove how good I am, or how good I think I am. And what Lincoln did to me was good, because I remember my first meeting with the staff. It was under Mark Kennedy at that point, just the sporting director, all that kind of, my goalie coach, Scott Fry. They were just talking very well about me. They were bringing all the stats from my previous season, so I could see they've actually done their homework. They were showing me all kind of new things I've never seen before, and what they were going to, or trying to achieve the season. And that's why it made it an easy decision for me, because, yeah, I had obviously other options, but because Lincoln did such a good job at the homework, obviously they're the top team. I know they're a well-run club, so I couldn't turn that down. And so far it's been a great decision for me to go here.
And just a couple more on Burnley as well. You would have trained with Joe Hart at the time as well, and then Nick Pope.
Yeah.
Two obviously excellent characters, proven in the game as well. Joe Hart particularly a big character. What did you learn from him during your time?
What did I not learn? When I came to Burnley, they had 4 or 5 international goalkeepers in the first team. Not only two you just mentioned, but they had the Danish international as well. And they got Bailey a year after, Bailey Pico-Farrell from Northern Ireland. So they had so many good keepers. So every time I was training with them, it was just a learning period, you could say. And specifically Joe Hart, he taught me what not to do and what to do. In the old school way. I always remember my first session with him. We were training with him, and I was doing some volleys towards him, and he didn't think it was good enough. So he just took the ball and volleyed straight back at me, even though he was in goal. And I was like, that just set the standard for, okay, what I could expect. Obviously, I don't know if it's a good or bad thing what he did, but I just learned from it. And since then, he's just helped me a lot. Off the pitch, how you speak to people, how you treat people. Obviously, always greet people with respect and say their name. So, you know, I can't praise how happy I was to meet Johard and Nick Pope and Tom Heaton as well, because they taught me a lot in the football world I didn't know before.
That moment you mentioned there, a moment of tough love, is probably one of those at the time where you're thinking, you're not thinking positively, are you? You're thinking, what's going on? Why is he? I'm guessing that would be the case. And certainly I've had that in broadcasting from older, far more experienced and probably better broadcasters than I am that have turned around. And at the time you think, what are they saying there? And then actually, it's only a couple of maybe months or years later, you look back and think, okay, I understand that now. It's about the standards, isn't it? And I guess that's so important. We're talking about someone that was capped for England, what, nearly 70 times, something like that. Man of the match at Real Madrid, at the Bernabeu, I think, way Manchester City as well. It is about those standards, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And coming as a young keeper, obviously you have to learn things, sometimes the hard way, and that's what happened to me. But I don't mind that, because you need to get hair on your chest when you obviously grow in the football world. And some of the ways of doing that is being taught the hard way, and that's what I was doing. But again, I could only praise what he did, because I still speak to him once in a while. And he's just such a good person, so I can only say good things about him.
And two very different playing styles with Sean Dyche and Vincent Kompany. What was that like for you as well from a goalkeeper's perspective? Because obviously that playing style, you're a huge part of it, but it might not be always completely directed towards yourself. What did you learn from the differing styles of them? And then maybe how have you been able to apply that with another way of playing in Michael Skubala?
So when I came to Burnley, my, you can say, goalkeeping physics was very similar to Nick Pope at that point, and what he was good at was kind of what I was good at as well. So I know Burnley's, if you say, youth program was about like, okay, how can we replicate Nick Pope into our youth team, because he was doing so well. He was just getting into the England international, and I think he was the guy that put in the most goals in Europe at that point. So he had a really good season. So they were obviously trying to take his strength into the youth team, and I just fitted in very well there. So I was obviously trying to look at him, saying, okay, what he's doing, can I do the same, or can I be very similar to him? So that's why I was trying to practice every day. And sometimes I wasn't even training with the first team. I was just standing behind looking at him, because that's what my goalie coaches want him to say, okay, look at what he's doing with his feet, with his hands, all that kind of stuff to save the ball. So I learned a lot from that. But that's probably more the old school way of doing it, because if you look at Sean Dyche, how he was playing football in Burnley, that was the old school way. There's not loads of risk playing out from the back. It was more like straight balls up to the strikers. And you know what? That suited me quite well, because again, the goalkeeper I am. But since then, I've obviously come to Lincoln, and when I've been out on loan, I had to learn new things, because not every team doesn't play the same way. So when Michael Skubala came in, I had to learn new things. It took time. I'm learning every day. I'm still learning, and hopefully I will learn for a long time. But I think I'm a better keeper now than I was when Michael Skubala came in, because the things he wants me to do is different from what I've been doing for the past 4 years.
Do you think that's why things have clicked now? Because again, I can only speak from a fan's perspective, and having been to a fair few games this season and having watched others on iFollow, it seems like they can be quite complex ideas that he's tried to put forward. And the team that I know that I went to see away at Derby County is very different from the team that I and that we will have watched absolutely smash Bristol Rovers, for instance. Do you think it's just a case of learning what was said at that time, but you can't implement it straight off the bat? And I know Michael, speaking on this podcast, said exactly the same thing. Is that why things have propelled in the way that they have?
I think it has, because if we wanted to learn and wanted to implement what he was saying. Also, like, sorry, the team was actually buying into what he was saying. We could learn it the way we are. And I think that helped that we are such a young group that actually wanted to learn, because he's coming from Leeds. He's worked with young players before, so you could see he knew what to do to young players. And yeah, it was a tough period. And we are a different team when he came in compared to now. And as you just said, yeah, we put 5 past Bristol Rovers, which is obviously great, but we want to do that again. And Michael, he always says, yeah, we're not done yet. We want to keep going. And to do that, we have to be good on the training pitch. And to do that in the game as well. So I think that's what we're doing.
And by the way, you were man of the match for that game at Bristol Rovers. How often is it that a team scores 5 goals and the keeper ends up winning player of the match?
Do you know what? It sounds stupid, but I'm just doing my job. It was a very fun game to play. I had a smile on my face all game through, because I want to work hard to keep the ball out net. And that first half, it seems like so many things just click for us as a team. We could score goals. We were defending like our life depended on it. And I believe as a goalkeeper that first half was easier to play than the second half, because I had something to do all the time. When as a goalkeeper, if you're just standing for 90 minutes straight, you've got nothing to do. It's very hard to keep focused. But like if you've got something to do every 5 or 10 minutes, you can keep yourself in the game. And because I had quite a bit to do in first half, I thought that was more fun, but also easier to play in than second half. And yeah, I got man of the match, but I was just happy to get the clean sheet. And when I saw he put the penalty over the bar, I was obviously buzzing for that.
I want to touch on a couple of things you said there. The first thing, so interesting about the idea of concentration, because I've seen the podcast, you may have seen it as well, Aaron Ramsdale with Ian Wright, and there was that viral clip about him saying he sometimes looks to the away fans for a bit of banter to keep him focused, because every 5, 10, 15 minutes he loses, I'm probably doing him a slight disservice there, but certainly every 15 minutes or so he loses a bit of concentration. I think Aaron got a little bit of stick for that on Twitter, as people do in this day and age anyway, but it sounds like you can relate to that. And 100%. I guess from a keeper's perspective, it must be difficult when you're there. And actually, ironically, your team are doing so well that you're having to stand there. And by the way, it's probably quite chilly as well, and keep focused and keep warm and keep on top of the game.
It is tough, because sometimes as a goalkeeper, you don't touch the ball for a long time. And how do you keep yourself focused for that period of time? You feel like you're just a fan watching the game, basically. So if you've got something to do, obviously it's easy to keep in. I found a good way of basically just shouting at my defenders, trying to stay in the game that way, communicating to everyone. And sometimes you have a little bit of banter with the away fans if it's going well for you. And that's part of the game. If we score a goal and I celebrate in front of the away fans, I would love that. But if they score a goal against me, I'll get everything back. So that's just a part of it. But as you're saying, it is tough, and I think many people don't realise how tough it actually is, because it's quite chilly, as you're saying. A winter night is not fun being a goalkeeper, because, well, if it's raining, it's windy, all the kind of you're getting wet and you can't do anything. Yeah, you can run back and forth, but that's basically it. You can't touch the ball. Your hands are getting cold, your feet are getting cold. So you have to find certain ways of staying focused in the game, and I've got my few things I'm doing, and I believe Ramsdale got something else to do, and Joe Hart got something else. So everyone is different, but I've found my good things of doing.
The other thing you mentioned there as well was, of course, the penalty that sailed over the bar in that Bristol Rovers game a couple of weeks back. Are you one of those that will happily win a game 5-1, or are you... You know, had that penalty gone in, would you have come away and been somewhat frustrated? Again, I'm using Aaron Ramsdale as the example here, but there was the documentary, wasn't there? The behind-the-scenes Arsenal one, that the name I've forgotten right this second, but I think he was a little bit annoyed with the fact that he conceded a goal but they'd still won, you know. And the point that I'm trying to make is, I guess there are some goalkeepers that will happily win a game 5-1, and there are others that would just much, much, much rather win 1-0. Where do you stand with it?
It's a very simple answer. I'll be fuming. We won 5-1 against Barnsley. And I think it was good there was no camera after the game, because I was fuming at the team at that point. As a goalkeeper and defender, you take pride in of keeping the ball out of net, and obviously I do the same. And when we are 4-0 up at that point, to concede a stupid goal, conceding loads of chances, the game could have changed. I'm not happy with that. So some of the players had to come over to me and said, yeah, Lucas, we just won 5-1. But I said, yeah, that's not good enough. So it was good I didn't do an interview after that, and no one saw me, because I was not happy, because I'm trying to get as many clean sheets this year as possible, and I saw that as an opportunity to get one more. I didn't get it. So once they got the penalty in the Bristol Rovers game, I got flashback to that game. Luckily, he obviously put it over the bar, and he tried to make the game a little bit more even, saying, yeah, it wasn't a pen, so I just put it over the bar, and I was happy with that.
And luckily, we're not recording this podcast straight after the Barnsley game then. Talk to me about Danish goalkeepers then. Peter Schmeichel, Kasper Schmeichel, Anders Lindegaard, of course, at Manchester United as well, to name a few. There does seem to be something in the water with Danish keepers. I was doing a little bit of reading before this, that the Danish catch seems to be a thing. Have you heard of this?
I have indeed, yeah.
Tell us what the Danish catch is, and is there a link between goalkeepers and being Danish, I guess, is the simple way of asking that.
Well, obviously, if you take the Danish catch as first, which is just a specific technique of catching the ball, and I think it's just got the name because Kasper Schmeichel were doing it, and Daniel Iverson from, he's on loan from Leicester to Stoke now, he's doing the same thing. So I think it just went viral because people have never seen that type of catch before, if you like. And that's why it's got a name. I can't do it. I've tried many, many times. I've got no idea how he does it.
Can you explain what it is?
Yeah, so basically it's, if the ball comes in chest height, you're always being taught to either go down in your legs or jump and catch it. Kasper Schmeichel just stand firm and then just catch it around the ball. And as I said, I've been trying to do it for many times. I just can't do it. It amazes me every time because it looks really, really good when he does it and looks so smooth as well. But it's very hard to do, because if you think about a ball coming towards your chest, you want to put your hands in front, but he just lets the ball hit his chest and then get his arms around it, basically. And I've only seen two or three keepers master it, and he's obviously one of them. So it's something I will try and improve, but I don't think I will implement it into my game, because what you've been taught when you're younger is obviously what you use now. And I think he's just been taught it from a very young age to do that. I had a different goalie coach, so my technique is different. But if we talk about Danish goalkeepers, Peter Schmeichel, as you said, he was one of my heroes when I was younger. I looked towards him and the type of goalkeeper he is. And then you mentioned Anders Lindegaard, who was at Burnley as well. So he was one of the
international. Of course, he was at Burnley. Yeah.
He was one of the international I looked up to, and I spoke to very well when he was at Burnley, and when I went there, what to do and what not to do. So yeah, that's a good group of goalkeepers in the past and present, and hopefully I can be in the future.
And if we rewind to the past, and Lucas Jensen, the aspiring footballer, if you like, at what point did you decide that not only did you want to be a professional footballer, but you wanted to be a goalkeeper? And maybe a question to ask as well is, when did the growth spurt come? Because what are you, Google says you're 1.98 metres, which is 6'5", roughly.
Yeah, 6'5"-ish.
When did that growth spurt come, and did it play a part in you wanting to become a keeper?
I've always been very tall. My parents are tall as well. So it was a fun thing. My dad used to coach me when I was younger. And I didn't want to be a goalkeeper, because I was just standing in goal, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to score goals. I want to do knee sliding when I score. I want to celebrate with the fans. So I made a deal with my dad when I was playing under him, which was, I was starting in goal, and then once we were 3-0 up, whatever, he could put me as a striker. and then I could come out and play outfield player. So I did that for a couple of years, but then I realized, okay, I have to choose whether I'm going to be a goalkeeper or outfield player. I got an opportunity to come to a very good academy in Denmark as a goalkeeper. And I said yes to that. So that's where it kind of started progressing into, if you like, being having this dream about becoming a professional footballer. It's still very far away at that point. And I think every young kid has the dream of becoming a professional footballer because it's very limited. It's a keyhole you have to go through to get there. Loads of hard work. And my story is probably different to many others in terms of what I've done, how many times I've stopped playing football, done something else, started again, going to England, all this type of thing. So I think it's created the person I am today because I've faced so many obstacles, if you like. And I've always had this mentality of I have to catch up because I've lost, I think it's 3 or 4 years in football because I've done something else, a different sport. So I've always had that mentality. I have to do extra to try to catch up on everyone else.
Well, that leads me perfectly onto my next question. Tell us about this other sport that you got involved in around 13, 14 years old, something like that. There's so many questions I could ask about it. First one was why, and the second one was what was it like for you? And tell us what it is firstly, because I haven't.
Yeah, so it's mountain bike. I started doing mountain bike I think I was 11 or 12 years old, just as a hobby, once a week, every Saturday, because we were playing on a Sunday. I was just doing because I thought it was fun. That was basically with my dad as well and a few other friends. Started doing that, and then I don't really know what happened that made me go into it, but like I just thought it would be a good idea to do it more often. And yeah, so I started doing it 3-4 times a week, and you have to choose at some point whether you want to keep playing football, because you can't do two sports at a high level, because there's too much training involved in both sports. So I lost a little bit for football. I fell in love with mountain bike instead. And I made the very hard decision, and I think if you ask many people in my family, it was the wrong decision. But I stuck with it, and I did mountain bike for two and a half years, where I quit football and then only did mountain bike. And there were some great years, but if I look back, it probably wasn't the right decision to do it.
I love how you describe it as a bit of fun, because, I mean, you were very good at mountain biking. I presume you probably still are, but you were very, very good, and you took it national, possibly even European level, didn't you?
That's true. So mountain bike was a very fast growing sport at the point. I think it's the fastest growing sport in Denmark. And I got into it in a young age. So obviously, you know, when you're young, you can get good at something if you just keep doing it. So I went to the national championship. I went to the Scandinavian championship. And then just before I was going to the European championship, I decided to start playing football again. For some reason, I always use the phrase, if you like your sport enough, you'll do it on a Wednesday night when it's snowing. And I didn't like it enough, apparently. So I stopped doing it after that. Or I started playing football while I was doing it. But I gradually just started playing football again.
So what brought you back to those cold Wednesday nights then?
I can't tell you. I actually can't tell you.
But how important is it to have those extra interests? We were speaking to your compatriot, Lars Sorensen, on the podcast a couple of months ago, and we'll come on to Lars shortly, who was brilliant as well on here. But he was big on having other interests, because this sport can dominate your life, can't it? And in a good way, largely, but that also has negative effects and connotations too.
I think it's only been a good thing. I had a short break from football. I had a break from football when I went to college as well, where I didn't play football for 2 years there. But like if we talk mountain bike comparison to football, the way you work as a goalkeeper and a mountain biker is actually quite similar in terms of your muscles and the power work you do. So Scott Fry, my goalie coach, he asked me the same question. How can you transit that training into football, into the goalkeeping work. And I think that's why I became so good at mountain bike, because I've been doing goalkeeping for a long time. So I had loads of power. I just needed technique. And that was basically what it took two and a half years to get. But once I stopped mountain bike, I still had all the power I needed for goalkeeping. It was just the technique again. So it's all just technique work. So I think that's been a good... You can say timeline in terms of my training. I haven't lost any training work because I've been doing something that transit from one sport to another all the time. And I think you need other hobbies, because otherwise, as you're saying, you'll run dead in it. And that's what I do every summer. I'm trying to stay away from football.
Scott Fry is someone you've mentioned a couple of times. What's your relationship like with him then? Because obviously... probably more than any other position on the pitch, the goalkeeping coach or the goalkeeping coach's relationship with the goalkeeper is probably the most tight-knit and closest and one of the most important there is. So clearly the fact that you've referenced him a few times is obviously a great influence on what you've done so far this season.
Yeah, so the goalkeeping position is very isolated compared to outfield players. You can actually see them as two teams. We got our small group and they've got their group, and then we're trying to work together on a game day. And Scott is, you can say he's my, he's not even just my goalie coach. You can say he's my, I don't even know how I should phrase it, but like saying he's my assistant manager or whatever. He's the one teaching me everything. And because I keep mentioning his name is because I never had a goalie coach that understood me as well as he's doing in terms of the goalkeeper I am. So if we're going back to the presentation Lincoln did, we spoke about in the start of it, where he was talking about what he really liked about me and what he obviously disagreed with what I was doing. There are so many things I could see myself keep doing and being this modern day goalkeeper, if you like. And he was showing me clips about everything from my games that I already did, but he just wanted to put his details on it. So the way he understood me, I've never felt that before. So that's why I think we work so well together. And again, I've only got good things to say about Scott, because the way he structures our training sessions is the way I want to play, if that makes sense. So obviously you're always trying to practice throughout the week what a position you're going to play against on a Saturday. But he puts his touch on it, so it suits me very well. And that's why I think he understands me as a goalkeeper in a way I've never felt before.
Yeah, great stuff. I imagine someone else that understands you and that you understand, as well, not least in a different native language, is Lasse Sorensen, who I mentioned before. Lasse, of course, was extremely complimentary about you when we spoke to him, so I'll give you the opportunity to do the same. And was... advice something that you sought from him when Lincoln were interested? Did you need to speak to Lasse, and what's your relationship like with him now?
When I heard about Lincoln first time, I texted Lasse straight away, basically, because I knew he was there. We played a game against each other last year when I was on loan at Accrington. We didn't really know each other at that point, but you know, being from the same country, you have this sort of connection straight away. So I spoke to him very briefly there. But this was before I knew Lincoln were coming in the summer. So once Lincoln came in the summer, I texted him straight away saying, okay, what's Lincoln and how is all the staff, how is the club, all that kind of stuff you want to know. And then he spoke so highly about Lincoln, so obviously I couldn't turn it down. But then since I've come to Lincoln, signed for Lincoln, me and Lasse have just spent very, very much time together, because we... obviously, both from Denmark, we can speak Danish to each other. And I think that just makes it a little bit easier than speaking English to each other. That's just my personal view. But like, because I can speak my first language to him, you just have a different connection than if he was an English person.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it makes sense. Lasse, of course, a huge coffee lover is something that we learned on the podcast. I think something we learned on the podcast at the time as well, that not only is he a coffee fan, but to the point where he has it saved as his lock screen photo, which I'm sure pleases his girlfriend on a regular occasion. Are you as much of a coffee fan as Lasse is?
He's got me into it.
Has he?
Believe it or not. So I've always hated coffee until a year, 2 years ago, where I've just started drinking. And this year he's got me into the lot. So we have a coffee nearly after every training session. We got our small coffee shop where we go to. And yeah, just enjoy our company together, basically. And as you're saying, he's got coffee saved on his phone. But I think it was his missus that got him into it, believe it or not.
Nice.
Don't quote me on that, but I think it might be.
Fair enough. It worked against her in the end with regards to the lock screen. So I think it was Lasses Lattes that we looked at. Could it be Lucas and Lasses Lattes going forward? Is that a potential business opportunity? Are you able to get in on that by any chance?
It could indeed, yeah. It could indeed. We went to Stokes coffee shop together. He unfortunately beat me in latte art, but I'm practicing every day. So if they ever invite us again, we'll have a good competition. But yeah, I'm very much into coffee now, and it was Lasses that got me into it.
And you're a competitive man, if this podcast is anything to go by, and some of the answers you've given me. So I won't be surprised if you surpass him on that front either. If we look at a few moments from this season, Lucas, we have to start with Sheffield United. Quite simply, what was that like for you, ultimately celebrating in front of nearly 3,000 Lincoln City fans away at a Premier League club, and you were essentially the hero? Are those the moments that, you know, are those the reasons why you become a professional footballer, and what was it like?
I think is you always got this dream about, like, this is how I wanted to pan out, and that was basically how I wanted to pan out. It was, first of all, it was a big game to play, and I don't think anyone expected us to win that game, but we wanted to give our best shot at it. And once the game go on, you grow into the game and you get more and more confident. So once first half passed and it was still 0-0, and then we got into second half, and yeah, they had a few chances, we had a few chances, and essentially just ended up 0-0. And I knew it was penalties after that, and I love penalties. I think one of the reasons I came to Lincoln was because I actually saved quite many penalties against them last year in a cup there. So I always had this small love for penalties. So I knew when I went into the penalty shootout that, yeah, I'm actually very confident when it comes to this. I'm not saying I'm going to save any balls there, but I had hopefully an idea of where he was going to shoot, and I had a dream about saving maybe one or two and then we will win it. And for it actually to happen was... it's probably one of those moments I probably never forget, because as you're saying, we had 3,000 fans behind my goal essentially. And every time I saved the ball, I turned around and I was trying to celebrate as much as I could with them. And when they put the third one over the bar and I saw the team running down to me, running down to the fans, it was probably just a dream come true, in all honesty. And something this is one of those nights you play football for, because you can celebrate with your fans. We're nothing without the fans, but like for everything, just working together and then get the win against the Premier League team, it was quite special.
And you and Scott had done your research as well. You had the names of the penalty takers and where you thought they were going to kick them on a water bottle, but you didn't necessarily have a chance to read that water bottle. What happened there?
So apparently their goalkeeping coach told their goalkeeper to kick it away. So he threw it into the crowd, their crowd basically, yeah. So I couldn't get it back. So when I went on to look at my towel and my water bottle, because I was trying to hide it, because I don't know why, but basically...
Well, that very reason.
Exactly,
probably.
Yeah, I just couldn't find it. And then after the penalty shootout, I went over to that goalie coach and he told me the reason for it, because they basically lost a penalty shootout 6 months prior to that, because they had the bottle. The other team had the bottle, so he just said to him, kick it away, don't let him have it. So I looked at Scott and Jordan, the other goalkeeper, for every penalty. Obviously I got my own technique, but just in case I looked at them saying, okay, which way are we thinking they're going to go?
It worked out all right in the end, didn't it?
It did indeed, yeah.
What other moments stick out for you? We obviously mentioned Bristol Rovers before, so I won't touch on that one again, although we could do a whole podcast on that specific game, I guess. You know, and maybe moments that you've learnt from. No player can have a perfect season, but I guess the difficulty for any goalkeeper is that, you know, what the obvious question is, one mistake, and particularly in that game, people will remember it, because if you make a mistake, the likelihood is there's going to be a goal. What's the learning process from those times? And I guess every time that anything like that does happen, which it happens to all keepers at all levels, you know, how do you improve from it? How do you use growth mindset maybe to go forward with it?
So football is a game of mistakes, and how can you learn from it? And as you're saying, a goalkeeper is kind of living on the edge of, if he's making a mistake, it'll cost a goal. No one is perfect, everyone is human. And I've certainly made my bunch of mistakes this year, but hopefully I've made some good things as well. So that's what the fans will remember. But like, I am a perfectionist, so I always look at, okay, how can I improve from the mistake I made and how can I not make that mistake again? So that's why I think football is a game of improvement and how can you limit your mistakes to become even better, if you like. So that's the thing. So yeah, I'll keep making mistakes, but if I keep learning from it, I think I'll be a better goalkeeper than I was before that.
Absolutely. And which are the moments, I guess, just as a brief summary, really stick out for you so far this season?
No,
we won't focus on all of us because there haven't been that many at all. And you've answered the question that I put to you very, very eloquently indeed. No, I just mean in general, which moments stick out to you that you've enjoyed so far this season? Any particular games? I'm just looking back. There have been, you know, big moments that you've had in games at pivotal points. It's just which ones maybe stick out from your perspective?
I have to say Bristol Rovers, because we won 5-0 and I think it was a very good game for my behalf, but then I have to look at the cup games as well. Playing Sheffield United, as we just talked about, West Ham, obviously a big game. They're coming to our stadium. Unfortunately, we lost 1-0, but
it could have gone either way, couldn't it?
It could. So I think that's probably the three biggest games for me over the season so far. I can't go into details why I think another game is better than the other, but if you look from the outside, that's obviously some really, really good games. Leyton Orient away, the rescheduled game. I really liked that one because you won 1-0. I had a couple of good saves in that. And to win 1-0, you get 3 points, you keep a clean sheet, and if you had a part in it, it just feels so much sweeter. Bristol Rovers, we won 5-0, so if I shipped the goal in, it wouldn't make a big difference because we would still win 5-1. But Leyton Orient, when we won 1-0, it just felt, it felt like one of those games where you're like, I did everything I could to win it, and for it to actually happen just makes you so much happier.
Just a couple more questions, Lucas, because you've been brilliant, but I'm conscious of your time as well. The fans are something that you've mentioned a good few times, and I haven't really asked you about them. Just as an overview, what are they like to play in front of? We've mentioned games like Sheffield United. We've had a really strong away following this season through good results and bad as well. As a goalkeeper, I guess it's probably even more important to have that close-knit relationship with the fans and to, in our case, utilise the noise that they create, and talk to me a little bit about that.
The fans have been brilliant. I've been surprised how loud they are, because we got between, 8,000 and 10,000 per game, but it sounds like double or triple that. We can go to away games where the opposite team has got 20,000, 25,000, but our fans sounds louder than that. So I think it's a special group of fans we got. And they make so much noise, which obviously is what you need. You need that 12th man behind you, if you like. And they're doing an incredible job, to be honest. And they've been very kind to me, taking me in, hopefully taking me in as one of their own. They've been brilliant, basically. Making noise all the time from the start to the finish. So there's not more we can ask for it.
The key term I've not used and that has not come up so far in this podcast is that word playoffs. At one stage, it seemed, if we're being honest, highly unlikely. Now, conscious that this podcast will go out 2 games after we're in record now, but as I said at the top of it, hopefully we can get a couple more good results along the way. Have you allowed yourselves a chance to think about it? Is it game by game basis? I know that is normally, and rightly so, the stock answer for a footballer is we take it one game at a time, but potentially big things are happening at this club and you're allowed to dream.
Yeah, you're allowed to dream. I like you saying that because I think we had a dream start of season. Could we get playoff? we certainly got the squad to get to playoff. But to have the squad is not enough. You obviously got to get the points as well. We had the bad period over Christmas. We had loads of injuries, loads of suspensions, which didn't help. But like the run we're on at the moment, I can't not look at, okay, who's in front of us, how far are we behind. I guess we're only 2 points behind playoff now. So we caught, nearly 15 points since January. And I think if you look at that, you can't not hope we're going to get playoffs. So obviously I'm hoping with all my heart that we're going to get it, because there'll be a big achievement for all of us.
It'd be some party as well, wouldn't it? It wouldn't just be coffees that would be drunk that night largely, yeah. Would it?
It would be everything. I think the fans will love it, the club will love it, and certainly all the players will love it as well.
And Lucas, we've loved having you on the We Are Imps podcast. Really appreciate your time and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.